So I was just sitting there, and I was struck by the fact that this is not exactly the most inspirational sounding opening talk for an event like this. You've come here to learn, to be inspired, to see all the great work that's taking place, and try to take it back and use it. You want to leave energized, and the first guy up is some old man telling you that you're terrifying your CEOs. It's not as bad as it sounds, but I'm not kidding. Now that I'm in this chairman role and I don't spend a lot of time day to day with the work that we're doing, other than just to see it afterwards and appreciate it, I spend a lot of time with CEOs and trying to learn how they're thinking about what all of you are doing. And a lot of quotes, a lot of thoughts, but it all boils down to this. There's a lot of great work we see in award shows, we see events like this, we see in our own organizations, but to CEOs who only care about one thing, which is building shareholder value, this is the way they look at digital marketing. And some of the things that we would think are the most innovative, the most exciting, the most highest impact, they think of as commons. Fantastic. They blaze across the sky, they light up the night sky, they get a lot of attention, and then they're gone. Sometimes they're gone in weeks, days, sometimes they last for months. But CEOs don't think in terms of campaigns, they don't think in terms of events and promotions, they think in terms of building a competitive advantage that allows them to win in the marketplace, and then to build shareholder value. And you, I'm here to tell you, I don't think you or we or any of us can ignore this, because these are the guys that pay the bills. These are the ones that make the decision whether that CMO is going to leave in the average of 22 months or is going to get to stick around for a few years to take all these great ideas and carry them through and make it happen. And the last 5 years, I think our industry has coalesced around what it is we need to do. There's still a lot of experimentation, questions, angst, what works, what doesn't work, but I think we're all kind of agreeing on the destination, even though we don't all get there. But the corner office does not agree. And I want to talk a little bit about what I think it's going to take for that to happen. And I want to start with, I'm going to do this first, give you 3 minutes to do some theory. And then we're going to get into all practical. I'll show you some cases and what I think those cases show us in terms of what we ought to be doing. So all products start as a specialty product. When a new company is formed and it's successful, there's something unique and different about it. And over time, there's this force of nature called competition that drives every category to being a commodity status. And unless you're in a brand new company, you're all fighting this every day. What can we do? What can we say? How can we set ourselves apart from the competition? And the best definition I've ever seen of marketing is that marketing is everything we do to push ourselves back to the left. That's what it is we do. That's what CEOs are looking for. They're looking for a sustainable competitive advantage. They're looking for something that matters, that has impact. Something that they can go to their board and their customers and say, we innovated in a way that sets us apart from the competition. And not, isn't it cool, but as a result, we can charge more, we can gain market share, we can increase loyalty, we can build our revenue and profits, and thereby build our shareholder value. And this, when you think about marketing, the tools we had 10 years ago, even 5 years ago, were pretty straightforward. Even digital marketing, I'm looking at Sarah, for the last 10, 12 years, we've been up saying digital marketing is different, and it was, but it was still advertising, it was still talking to people, it was still saying things and hoping to change their minds. Maybe you did it in a different venue, maybe you did it in different media, maybe you tracked it, analyzed in a way you never could before. It was new, it was different, but fundamentally, it was pretty much the same. And so we've built up an industry, I think there's 300,000 people working in marketing and advertising in the US, if the statistics I found are right, that all kind of learned the same thing. We read the same books, we had the same mentors, We were trained by the senior people within our organizations who might have been 35, 45, 55, and they all learned it in the past. And this is what we learned to do. And I want to take an example of the airline industry. This is the ultimate commodity business. I think we can all agree, if you're sitting in a plane today and don't see the colors and don't know the brand, you'd be hard-pressed to know where you were. I mean, they compete on schedule and price, and that's it. It's like selling, pink pork bellies. It's a commodity. That's the reality. So in the old days, when they would come to the marketing people and say, make us different, make us special, we would go out and say things to customers. We would say we were friendlier, or we had more better reservation system, or whatever it is. But it was all, yap. And customers knew that you were just yapping at them because all you could do was talk. And what the customers could do is experience the product and realize that your talk is all a bunch of bull. But now, starting about 5 or 6 years ago, particularly with the growth of mobile and social, that's changed. When I fly on an airline, in fact, I'm flying to San Francisco tonight on Virgin. I don't know how many of you have flown on Virgin. Their planes are great, their service is great, but it's not just the physical product that I associate with that brand. It's the digital experience that they have created as a cocoon around the product. And so what we do now looks less like marketing communication and more like product development. And product development is something CEOs care a lot about. So it's not just the plane, it's the mobile experience, it's the online experience, it's the digital out of home, it's the social, it's everything that we surround that product with. So our job for 50 years has basically been to change perceptions. In fact, it was pretty cool. I mean, how many people my age out there, but we used to always say, well, you know, that good advertising could sell, kill a bad product faster than no advertising at all. It was like a mea culpa for advertisers, the people in the advertising business. Hey, the advertising is great, but the product sucks, so it's not my fault. Wash my hands, I'm done. That doesn't work anymore. Our job as marketers is to change reality, to do something real, to do something that matters, and to shoot for this. This is the standard you should shoot for. When you launch your program and your competitors figure out what you've done and the impact it's going to have, you want the CEO at the competitor to stand up and scream at the CMO. Why are we not doing this? How did we miss this opportunity? How are we going to fight back? And if the programs you're working on don't rise to that level, then you're going to have a hard time getting the budgets, the commitment of the full company to support what you're doing. So this all sounds very, so that's our job now, is to do something. And that's the book I wrote, Do or Die, is basically around that. It's not just about saying things, it's about doing things. So, why is this so hard? I'm going to show you two examples. And the two examples have been around for a while. And people say, well, why don't you get some new ones? The reality is, it's hard to find some new ones that meet the standard of what I'm going to show you. So why is it so hard? And I think there's three key challenges that we're facing. The first is we need to redefine the definition of a big idea. I can remember a lot of conversations over drinks where people are arguing about, does the big idea still matter, or is it a lot of little ideas that add up to a big impact? I believe the big ideas matter more than they ever did, but these big ideas don't look anything like they did a decade ago. They're not marketing communication ideas, they're product ideas. Reverse the process from channel up to idea down. I believe this is the biggest thing we as an industry have done incorrectly. We've divided ourselves into channels. We're all developing programs within our channels and hoping that things are going to work out. And it's the fault of clients and agencies that are divided along silos based on channels that prevent big ideas from being shaped and driven through the organization. And finally, master the art of collaboration, which you hear a lot about. I'm going to show you an example for Nike how they actually manage collaboration between their agencies and within their own organization to execute in a way that most of us find to be very, very difficult. So let's talk about big ideas. So this was what a big idea used to be. It might not be television. If you were B2B, it might have been a magazine ad, it could have been radio, newspaper, but it was a communication idea. It was you talking to people, hoping that they would listen, hoping you could change their mind, either through the power of the underlying message, the strategy, the imagination of the creative, or often just the sheer amount of money you spent pounding that message into people's heads. That was your goal. Say something that caused people to listen and change their mind. Today, in a world where our jobs do product development, I think you need to start with a different question. Don't start with the question, what can we say that people are going to respond to? Ask questions like this. What do customers hate about our category? There aren't many of you working for companies in businesses that are so flawlessly run that if you ask their customers, what do you hate about doing business with us, they say, nothing, I love it. There's a few, but there aren't many. Particularly big companies, big institutions, it's tough to create an experience, a total experience that absolutely thrills customers every day. Ask this question and you'll discover that digital, mobile, social, digital out of home, viral, gaming, all these new tools we have might give you an opportunity to make it better to be a customer of your brand. What are the top three items on our CEO's agenda? This is a great way to get into this problem. Every year, CEOs typically send out an email or they do a video and they talk about these are the three things we're going to be working on. And I guarantee if you go back from this event, dig up the CEO's message from January, you can look at one of those and say, we can have an impact on that. This is one of the best pieces of advice I ever got to get promoted in a company. Ask yourself every day, what I'm working on, is it what the CEO cares about? So I've asked a lot of people this question, and 90% of them say no. I have this little area, I'm doing this. And yes, theoretically, eventually it all ladders up to what the CEO cares about. Very few people are working on directly what matters to the CEO. This is another great way to start thinking about the role that all this digital plays in the success of the company. And then finally, can I get some water up here, please? Thanks. What deeper need can we satisfy? This is something we used to do in advertising. Well, let's just not talk about the benefits and the features of the product. Let's try to identify the underlying emotions that we can tap into, the deeper need and association that people have with a product or category, and tap into that with our marketing and advertising. That principle is the same in digital marketing, but it's in ways it's easier to do and more powerful to do when you're actually doing things that are real, not just yapping at customers, and I'll show you some examples of that. So this is a lot of change. This is not the way we're used to doing business. So to try to make this easier, I would want to show you a couple examples. These have been around for a couple years. They've won awards at Cannes and other events. People have talked about them. One is Veil Epic Mix. The other is the Nike Right to Future campaign. I'm going to briefly go through what they are, but I'm doing that mainly to dive into how they're really fundamentally different and what you can learn from these two programs and others like them. Take it back into the work you do every day. So we all know Veil is a ski resort. They actually own 17 ski resorts throughout the western U.S. They are one of the biggest operators, I think the biggest operators in the country. When you think about skiing and what Veil might talk about in their advertising, they might talk about the fantastic snow, they might talk about the villages, they might talk about just the experience of the outdoors and these beautiful environments. There's a lot for them to talk about. They might talk about the after-dinner life, after-ski life and the fun of being with each other. So Veil was really struggling after the economy fell down. And the CEO, Robert Katz, did something that I still don't know why he had the insight to do this. He was gathered all his marketing people around agencies and internal teams and started talking about what can we do to drive volume. And people were talking about mobile and social and the impact, content marketing, and all the things we could be doing that we've never done before that would appeal to our customer segment especially. And Robert Katz said, he just had this sense that these were going to be a bunch of comments and they wouldn't matter. And he said, look, that's not enough. We need to do something that really matters. And he called together his entire senior leadership team, all of his marketing, operation, finance, IT people, inside, outside resources in all of those areas. And they sat down and said, what can we do that's big, that really will change our role in this industry and drive a wedge between how people think about us and how they think about our competitors? And they took off on this idea that skiing is a social activity. It's not just the investments that we've made in the mountains, the lifts, the villages, the restaurants. It's the social experience that goes with it. It's the bragging to your friends about the amount of feet that you ski. It's competing with your friends. It's competing with yourself. It's setting personal goals. This is that idea of tapping into a deeper need. There's a lot of deep emotional stuff that goes with skiing. People who are really into skiing don't do it just because they like the thrill of swooping down hills. It's personal to them. It affects them. And they realized as a group that this is something they ought to be able to tap into. So they did some brainstorming and came up with Epic Mix. And it starts with their badges. These are their passes, 800,000 of these that are already on the mountain. They embedded them with RFID chips. Didn't even have to tell anybody and get them enrolled in the program. Then they put RFID readers at all of their gates for their lifts. And instantly were tracking everything everybody did on 17 mountains. Their 800,000 pass holders, they knew where they were all the time, and they did it in real time. And then they created Epic Mix. So all you have to do is just sign up, and when you go home after your day of skiing, your entire history of what you did that day on all of their mountains over this course of the season, and now that it's in the third year, previous seasons, is all there for you. You can track your progress, you can keep set goals for yourself, you can earn pins based on what you've been up to. So now you've got a history of everything you're doing allows you to really tap into that emotional part of skiing. There's a mobile app. People are pulling these, they've got their phones with them now on the, you buy a ski jacket now, it's got a pocket for your phone, so they all have them all the time. They actually built an app that allowed people to, this is the second year, it's not a comment, year two, let's keep going. They built an app that allows people to see where their friends are, so they connect with Facebook and you can find out where your friends are on the mountain right now. You can earn pins and do it in real time. How are you doing that day? There's a leaderboard, so for people who are competitive, they can compete based on feet, vertical feet skied, number of trails, number of mountains, number of days. So they can compete on the leaderboard to see who is the most committed skier. This has been nothing short of wildly successful. They have 200,000 people now doing it. People come home and they post automatically to Facebook what they did that day. This year, it just ended, over 2 million individual posts generating literally billions of impressions for Vail at no cost. They're so committed to this. In year three, they had a great idea. They sent professional photographers up on all the mountains with cameras with RFID readers. So they just started taking random pictures all over the mountain. You with friends, you skiing. They take a picture, just walk up to you, scan your badge, and when you got home, that picture was in your personal portfolio. You can instantly share it to Facebook. And I talked to Robert Katz, I talked to him originally about this a couple years ago when I was working on the book, and I talked to him again in the spring. And I said, what's your commitment to this? He said, this is who we are. This is like if I'm going to spend $10 million on this year, it's like a capital investment. I don't even think of it as marketing. I think of it as part of who we are, it's part of the product. Do I want to buy some new snow blowing equipment, or do I want to upgrade EpicVix? And we are committed to this. And they've had double-digit growth through this whole period, and he believes a lot of it is directly related to EpicVix. He talks about it to the board, he talks about it to their investors. You've got the CEO of the company absolutely 100% backing this program. So that's a great example of a big idea that's a product idea and not an advertising idea. And I think it's a model for the kind of things we should try to do. So how does that happen? One of the key things he did is reversed the process. So this slide's actually about a year old. I should get a new one, but it would just be busier than this one. If you go to events like this or at any event or take calls from people, I mean, it's shocking how many companies there are solving problems in this space. All the problems are important. There's no way to know who all the winners are going to be, but it is shocking. And what's happened is we have, in each of these areas, whether it's social, mobile, display, or whatever it is, you've got client teams focused on it, we've got parent agencies that's focused on it, that hook up with technology providers that focus on it. And every single one of them are doing programs that work. I mean, I've seen a lot of mobile programs that we've done. I'm not pointing fingers. And I sit in the meeting and say, geez, this is great. We spent $500,000 on this and generated $8 million in incremental profit. And all I'm thinking is like, does Ford give a shit about $8 million in incremental profit? I don't think so. They're great programs, but they're not adding up anywhere in our industry to things that have the kind of impact that EpicVix does. This is what we're doing. We're in our channels, we're building these programs, we're selling them through the organization, we're tracking it, we're going back for more money. And what we need to do is what Vail did. Have a big idea, something really big, and drive it through all the channels. Robert Katz made it very clear. Mobile, social, marketing, the digital out-of-home, viral, everything we're doing is EpicVix. And you come to me from your silo and you tell me how that is going to support EpicVix and don't do anything else because I'm not interested. That's the model for how this needs to work. So one of the challenges is there aren't many companies, I would say, virtually none, where the CEO takes that kind of leadership role. Vail is a medium-sized company, medium to big. I think they're a little over $1 billion in revenue. They're approaching the size where that probably could never happen. So how do you do that within the world of marketing? Now, I'll give the example of Nike to talk about that. I think we've all probably remember the Right the Future campaign that Nike did in association with the 2010 World Cup in South Africa. Won a lot of awards, got a lot of attention. Their problem is simple. I mean, globally, Nike is in second place behind Adidas. They're just in football, globally. They were not a sponsor of the World Cup. Adidas was a sponsor of the World Cup. I believe they spent $60 million to be the global sponsor. So Nike was trying to figure out, what can we do? And the Right the Future campaign is what they did. Now, I think a lot of you think of it as a video. But the video came late, and I've got the video here. We'll show it in a second. Carrie Hoyt-Pack is a director-level person within Nike. Carrie Hoyt-Pack ran a program that has fundamentally helped. It's not the whole thing. Obviously, Nike's invested in product and distribution and everything else, but created a program within her group that had a significant impact on the long-term market share, positive impact that Nike enjoys in football. This Right the Future campaign is an example, I think, of what all of us should be doing. I'm going to describe it very briefly. You could go on for an hour. There's so many pieces to this beyond the video. But I'll describe it briefly. Mainly, I'm going to take from it what I think is the most important learning that we can apply to what we do. So the insight that they had is that globally, football is a huge part of the culture of for young boys and the young men, teens, and young adults buy and drive most of the football footwear that's sold throughout the world. So you've got to get these young guys. That's their market. And it's the same as when I was growing up, it was baseball or football or whatever it is. I mean, it's not a sport, it's part of their culture. The passion that they have for the sport, for the athletes and their teams is just off the charts. And so what Nike decided to do, well ahead of the 2010 World Cup, was to give these kids a way to express their passion for the sport. And they created something called the Chance. And what they did was they invited kids to videotape themselves showing off their skills, and they created a global competition on YouTube. So people would upload these videos of them showing off their skills to YouTube. There was a regional competition. So in regions around the world, in countries around the world, they brought in professional coaches then, invited the top kids to come and demonstrate their skills. These were mini camps. It was almost like the NFL Combine, where coaches evaluated what all they were doing. And at the end of this whole process, this young man from South Korea was identified as the most talented young football player in the world through this program, The Chance. They started ahead of the World Cup with, I think, 75,000 football fans on Facebook. By the time the World Cup was over, they had 30 million. And it all started with this program, The Chance, and it built from that. So you've seen this video, I'm sure. It was launched globally with a Facebook takeover. It's a 4-minute video that captured this idea of based on what you do in sport and life, your life's going to go this way or that way based on whether you get it right or you get it wrong. It was very emotional. If you haven't seen this, you should pull it up and look at it. It was extremely well done. And then they took this and built an entire program at the World Cup around it. And the basic thing they did was decided to be, we want to be the go-to spot for football fans globally during the World Cup. And they did it, and again, I wish if I had an hour, I would show you all the pieces they did. But they did things like, similar to Epic Mix, they had a nerve center in South Africa. They had photographers, professional photographers that were on the ground taking photography, automatically uploading it via Wi-Fi to this nerve center. When something happened, it was cool, a victory or a kick, a goal, whatever it was, a defensive play that was just cool, they would grab that. One of these six soccer fans, young people in this basement, would write something and instantly upload it to Facebook. It took a huge amount of coordination. They had to get the rights for to do it ahead of time. They had to convince Nike attorneys that these young people should be able to do this without going through any sort of approval process. But they're a risk-taking organization, and the payoff was fantastic, because within days, people knew that the absolute fastest way to follow what was going on at the World Cup was through the Nike Facebook page for us, for football. And they built this audience up. They did tons of other stuff. They did things in the venues. They did applications that kids could use to learn skills, trade. They did mobile, viral, everything you could think of. It was a huge content integrated play that resulted in, at the end of the World Cup, the Nike unaided awareness was higher than Adidas. And Adidas had spent $60 million on a sponsorship, and I don't know how much more in support of that sponsorship. They had multiple quarters of market share gains globally in this category. So huge success. And it's an example of how, even within pure marketing, the Epic Mix thing involved IT and operations. It was very complex. But even within pure marketing, how Kerry was able to create something that was a big idea, that wasn't just advertising, wasn't just yapping. They did something that mattered. It was idea up, idea to channel, idea down, not channel up, was completely and totally integrated across a lot of departments in her organization and a lot of agencies. And that's what I want to talk about, collaborative innovation. We talk about this a lot. We talk about it in our industry. We talk about the big conference table.